It's David Jacobs, very generously speaking to us about this issue. I have a letter in front of me titled, Do Not Fail Us a Second Time. It's written by Paul Rusesabagina, who was a Medal of Freedom, was awarded the Medal of Freedom by the U.S. because of his efforts. And here it says, my name is Paul Rusesabagina, in 1994. As manager of the Hotel Mille des Mille Collines in Kigali, I sheltered 1,268 people from the violent outside our doors. In 2005, the United States honored me with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I write to you now for my own sake, not for my own sake, but for men and a woman whose names appear on the film poster and are about to be placed in the very danger I survived. In 1994, the United Nations failed Rwanda. The world had the means to halt the killing and did not use them. And an entire generation has lived with the consequences. I do not recall this to reopen old wounds, but to say something plainly. An institution that failed Rwanda once by looking away must not fail it a second time by looking away again, this time from the very people its own courts created. Justice does not end when a tribunal closes its doors. It must continue until the very end for the last prisoner and the last released man, or it was never justice at all. I know what assurances from the government of Rwanda are worth, because I was given them, and they meant nothing. In August 2020, I boarded a flight I had been told would take me to Burundi. It was diverted to Kigali, and I was arrested the moment I landed. For more than 900 days, I was held, much of that time in conditions no person should endure, and without the medical care that my age and my illnesses required. I was put through a trial that observers around the world recognized as a performance rather than a process, and I was sentenced to 25 years. For a man of my age, a cancer survivor with a heart condition, that was a sentence to die in a Rwandan prison. I am alive and free today for one reason alone. The government of the United States, Belgium, and European Union intervened directly on my behalf. Its most senior officials made the calls. A third country helped to broker my release. I had a name the world recognized and a great power willing to act for me. Even then, my captors were careful to announce that my conviction would stand. Rwanda did not free me because justice corrected itself. It released me because the pressure became too great, costly to bear. Once again, there is a reason the security did not place this tribunal in Kigali and did not send those it convicted to serve their sentences in Rwandan prisons. It placed the court in Arusha and the prisoners in third countries, such as Benin, Senegal, and Mali, because it judged rightly that impartial justice and the humane treatment of prisoners could not be guaranteed inside Rwanda. In the three decades since, the conduct of the Rwandan state towards its critics, its prisoners, and perceived opponents has confirmed that judgment, not overturned it. In my case is one proof among many. To reverse that careful decision now and hand these people and these records to Rwanda for the sake of closing a budget would be to unlearn in a single moment what 30 years have taught. Now I ask you to think of men who do not have what I had. The person still detained under the authority of the mechanism in Benin and Senegal, and those acquitted or released and left without a safe home in Niger have no famous face, no foreign passport, and no government that will move a foreign ministry to save them. If the United States delivers them into, pardon me, if the United Nations delivers them into Rwanda, no one will be coming to pull them out. What took the weight of a superpower to undo in my case would in theirs simply be done and never undone. Independent courts in the United Kingdom and the Netherlands have already refused to send people to Rwanda because they do not believe its guarantees. The acquitted persons in Niger refused to go, even with assurances, because they feared for their lives. They're not mistaken. They are simply paying attention. I do not ask the council to reopen any question of guilt or innocence. That is not my purpose and is not the issue before you. I ask this. Recognize that these acquitted or released, those acquitted or released by the tribunal, are free men and secure for them, in practice, both their liberty and a safe country willing to receive them, rather than allowing destitution or withdrawals of support to drive them back toward Rwanda. Continue to support, supervise, and protect every imprisoned person under the mechanism authority until the very end of his sentence, in accordance with international standards, including his Medicare, his contact with family, and access to counsel. Rather than transferring that responsibility to Rwanda, do not transfer any person to Rwanda without an independent assessment in each individual case or the risk to that person's life and safety. Keep the archives of the Rwanda Tribunal, which hold the identities of protected witnesses, under United Nations custody and independent protection, not under the control of the state those witnesses feared. I survived because, in the end, the world was watching and someone with power chose to act. The men I am writing about have only this council watching, and only this council with the power to protect them. The United Nations failed Rwanda in 1994. In 2026, it has the chance not to fail them again. If Rwanda's promises had been weighed against Rwanda's record, I might have been spared what I endured. I am asking you to make that measurement now and to carry out this work to its honest end before it is too late for those who cannot call a superpower to their side. Respectfully, Paul Roussa Sabagina. That's his letter to the UN Security Council members. And it's a very eloquent call, very logical. And let's see if those powers follow reason and justice. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll come back, and we will talk to Safar Bengash.